The Capital Investment Committee will come to order on March 7th. Welcome the two guests from Hermantown that have moved to other areas of the state and come to ask for projects and justify their ask. Mayor, welcome. Representative Stevenson, you're first up.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members of the committee, for hearing this bill, which provides funding for a very, very exciting project opportunity that we have in the northern suburbs of Minneapolis. And I want to start by letting members of the committee and public in on what I think is one of the best-kept secrets in the Twin Cities area, which is that just about a dozen miles north of Minneapolis, the Coon Rapids Dam creates a six-mile recreational pool on the Mississippi River. So the dam regulates the current and keeps the water level stable and effectively makes a very large, long, and skinny lake in the northern suburbs. And I call it the best-kept secret because several years ago, I was out on the river on the 4th of July weekend, and I was listening to the radio. I was listening to KQRS, and the announcer said that there were over 1,000 boats on Lake Minnetonka that day. And I looked upriver, and I looked downriver, and I counted three on the recreational pool on the river. But it's a really great regional asset. It's a beautiful part of our community. But access for residents who don't live on the river is pretty limited. The recreational pool, as I mentioned, 6 miles, almost all of it is single-family homes line the pool on either side. There's very limited opportunities for the public to engage with that piece of water. In fact, really the only parkland that's on the pool is directly adjacent to the dam, so it's not a place that you probably would want to swim, for example. But here we have an opportunity on the northern end, away from the dam, to create a place for all members of our community to interact with the river. And Mayor Karasik is going to talk a lot about the history of this particular site and why it's also historically significant and why it is so connected to the community and a number of existing trails and parks. But it's really a great opportunity for us to develop a place that people in not just the city of Champlain, but all of the surrounding suburbs to interact with one of the great regional assets we have in the northern suburbs. So with that, with the chair's permission, I would turn it over to Mayor Karasik.
Mayor, welcome.
Madam Chair, committee members, thank you very much for the opportunity to speak here today. And I got to tell you what an honor and a privilege it is here to speak directly to you as being a Hermantown graduate. In fact, when I was in seventh grade, I wrote a paper about you.
Oh, my gosh.
And I got to tell you, it was really exciting. It was my representative, Mary Murphy, and it brings back a lot of memories and a lot of history there. But that being said, again, thank you very much for the opportunity to be here. To add on to what Representative Stevenson said, and he did an outstanding job detailing the necessity of this project, to give you a little historical background, this area was a meeting place going back for hundreds of years. This place goes back to, because of its geographic location in the confluence of the Elm Creek, which is a 108-mile watershed to the west, and the Rum River, which goes all the way up to the Mille Lacs, all the way up to Mille Lacs, to the north. Settlers, Native Americans, travelers, fur traders, everybody used this point as a sort of a confluence, a location for a gathering place, a regional gathering place for the whole entire area. And even Father Louis Hennepin wrote about it, and we have a monument there at this specific location that in 1680 he left this location to go find St. Anthony Falls, which is exciting. So all of those years later, this area still is a regional connection point to the area. We have established new trail connections that will connect through the Elm Creek Park Reserve all the way to the south and to the west. We have the MRT, which is a trail connection that's going to come all the way from Minneapolis to the north. And as that continues on, it will take it all the way from Champlain then to Otsego to the north and the west. So it really does provide a regional connection to the area. and hopefully it will continue to do that. There's been over $15 million worth of investment in the area over the last 20 years by the city of Champlin, purchasing land and purchasing and doing projects in the area to help develop and promote this area. We're at the cusp right now of making this a reality. We have a tax increment district that is elapsing. The time is elapsing on it that it makes it a sense of urgency for us to get this project moving in order to establish the rest of a redevelopment project in the area. So that's one of our main points that we're focusing on, trying to get this project moving forward. So we're excited to be here to present this opportunity for not only the city of Champlin, but for the entire region around, so they can have access to the Mississippi River and all the other amenities that we have in the area. Okay. I'll stand for any questions. Thank you.
Mayor, is this part of the Metropolitan Parks and Trails?
The MRT is going to connect all the way through it. And maybe I have with me, if you don't mind, our Parks and Rec Director that can speak a little bit more details to that specific.
Madam Chair, committee members, thank you this morning for this opportunity. To answer the question, what is planned from the Three Rivers Park District is to partner with Hennepin County and build what's called the West Mississippi River Regional Trail. That would come all the way through Minneapolis, Brooklyn Center, Brooklyn Park, through Champlin, through Dayton, all the way up to Otsego. And that is in the works. That's part of their master plan at this point.
Would you please state your name, please?
Madam Chair, yes. My name is Charles Lane. I'm the Parks and Facilities Manager for the City of Champlin.
Okay. And is Champlin part of the Three Rivers District, or are they just connected to?
Madam Chair, we are a separate entity. However, Three Rivers Park District has their regional connections that are adjacent to the City of Champlin.
Madam Chair, a large part of the Three Rivers Park and the Elm Creek Park Reserve actually resides in Champlin. I would probably say a quarter of the Elm Creek Park Reserve actually was within the boundaries of the City of Champlin, and we have the trail connections coming from the Three Rivers Park District to this location.
Madam Chair, roughly 5,000 acres.
Thank you for that clarification. Any other questions? Representative Lee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and just want to say thank you to Representative Stevenson and Mr. Mayor for bringing this project forward. And it is of regional significance for us, even, you know, for me and my district being right next to the river. From access to the river is often quite difficult, and, you know, from personal experience and, you know, just hearing from my constituents, for those who do have access to transportation, you know, the dam that you mentioned, it is part of the only place that most of my constituents are able to access the riverfront right now. And so I believe that, you know, adding this part to the river in your district will be, you know, larger significance, just not just for your district, but for the state of Minnesota and for our metropolitan region. So I just want to say thank you for bringing this forward.
Representative Wolgamott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I, too, would like to echo the sentiments of Vice Chair Lee. I'm very proud to be the representative from St. Cloud, District 14B, and we are blessed with not one, not two, but three parks that are adjacent to the Mississippi River. And here in Minnesota, I think it's a real strength for us to be on the, have the mighty Mississippi. And I know that for my constituents, our parks by the river are a place to come together, unite as a community, you know, like you mentioned, interact with the river. And so, Representative Stevenson, I just want to thank you for your leadership in bringing this project forward. And I agree. I think that this is an investment that will strengthen your community, but also make us a better state. Thank you, Madam Chair.
You're welcome. Representative Stevenson, when you started, you talked about the river and opening it up and it being the best-kept secret and all, but you didn't say anything about fish. Are there fish?
There are fish, and there's a lot of fishing that goes on the river. At the Coon Rapids Dam, we have a great event every year called Carp Fest that is really well attended, but there's recreational fishing all the way through the river. And one of the things that's neat about this project is it provides some public docks on the river to have even more access.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Madam Chair, I'll add one more point on that. We actually host a bass fishing tournament on the Mississippi River that leaves this particular location every single year.
All right. Maybe we'll come for that.
Yes. Sounds good.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Lissigard. You have to talk fast.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Today I'm bringing for Northeast Regional Correctional Center for funding, and I got to be honest with you, Madam Chair, you know more about this project than I ever will. But it's truly unique. It gives the tools and the ability for people that are going through a difficult time in their life because of decisions they made. It gives them an opportunity to work on skill sets, so when they re-enter, they have some skills. So with that, I have Kay Arla, the director of the Arrowhead Regional Corrections, that would like to give you an overview.
Welcome, Ms. Arla.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, and thank you to the committee for allowing us this opportunity to talk about this project. Arrowhead Regional Corrections is a joint powers agency that was formed in 1976 by the five counties that make up the Arrowhead region. And so it's a huge geographic area, including Lake County, Cook County, Coochaching County, Carleton County, and St. Louis County. We have three divisions. We provide all of the correctional services in that region, including all of the probation services. We own and operate a juvenile detention facility. And last but not least, we own and operate the Northeast Regional Correction Center, or as we affectionately call her, NERC. And I'm here today to talk about NERC. NERC is a 144-bed correctional facility for adult men. It is located about 15 miles north of Duluth in Saginaw, Minnesota, and it provides all of the traditional correctional programming that you would expect in a local jail. So we have an outstanding education program there. We do cognitive interventions with the men. We have a licensed chemical dependency program. We provide mental health services, medical services. But really what makes NERC unique is that in addition to being a traditional correctional facility, it is a 3,200-acre working farm. We grow all kinds of vegetables. We raise chickens, turkeys, and hogs. The men come to NERC and are assigned to a work crew. Many work in the farm operations. They are in the fields. They are helping to raise the livestock. The men work in the kitchen program. We have a certificate that they can receive in, it's called Serve Safe, that they can use for employment afterwards, knowing how to work in a commercial kitchen. They do interior maintenance, they do exterior maintenance, and they also work in our meat processing facility. So everything that we grow and raise at NERC, we process on site, and then we use that to feed the men and offset those food costs. This is unique not just because it's a combination of farming and corrections, but also because it results in very good outcomes. About 83% of the men who serve their time at NERC do not commit new felony offenses for 3 years from discharge. That is a very good recidivism rate. And I don't want to leave the committee with the impression that NERC is only dealing with, low-level offenders. About 75 to 80% of the men at NERC are felons who might otherwise be in a prison bed costing the state of Minnesota money. The capital needs that we have, though, are challenging. Because it's a working farm, we have 42 different buildings on the NERC campus. Most support farm operations and are in various need of capital investment. The five counties have already invested $7 million in renovating what we call the main building. And the main building is where the men are housed. It's where our kitchen and dining room are. It's where the administrative offices are. But we have additional buildings that also are in need of improvement. our highest priority this year is the meat processing facility. We are on borrowed time. Basically, that building is on life support, and we have been told by both the DOC, Department of Corrections Inspector, and the Agriculture Department's Inspector that we need a plan and we need to tear the building down and build a new meat processing facility. The men that work in meat processing also can receive a certificate, and we are learning that meat cutting skills are very hard to come by these days. So many of our men have already successfully moved out of NERC and into the job market because there are no vocational programs for meat cutters anymore. The other thing that makes the meat processing facility unique of all of the buildings at NERC is its connection to the larger community. Not only do we process our own livestock, but we process livestock for the surrounding farmers and have done that for years. So many of the farmers are bringing their livestock to us and have for decades. We charge a fee for that, and I'm told that we fill a great need to the farming community in that area of the state. There are no other meat processing facilities that are readily available. Often farmers would have to transport their livestock hundreds of miles, which makes it really cost prohibitive for them. So we believe that that particular project is critical and needs to be addressed at this time. The impact to the state is that this is really a regional project that serves not only the correctional needs in that area, but now also job market needs and farming needs. And the better job that we do, the fewer of these men end up in a very expensive prison bed. So I think you'll see on the back of our brochure a motto that says, we are a work farm that works. And I'm happy to entertain any questions.
Representative Cantrell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Arola, I'm extremely impressed by the programs and opportunities available at this facility. And I just wanted to kind of receive your feedback on, do you feel that, like the facilities and the programs available have a direct relationship to the low recidivism rate at the at this complex?
Absolutely. I think it's that unique combination of doing evidence-based correctional programming that we know works, but also then giving them something to do during the day. The men working in the greenhouse, starting from seed to harvest, I've had men come up to me with great pride in they were responsible for taking care of the hogs. And evidently, typically you lose some hogs every year. And so this man came up and said, I haven't lost a single hog. He is proud of the care that he was giving. So I think that combination is working. And so we'd like to continue to do that good work.
And this, Arola, it goes back to the productive day of the 90s.
Yes, it does.
Initiatives.
And
yes.
Thank you for your support of that, Chair Murphy.
Representative Stansted.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to thank you for bringing up the need for that meat processing facility. You don't think of the Iron Range as being an ag area, but there are actually quite a few people that are really interested, and they have, you know, agriculture, they have livestock animals, and it is very cost prohibitive for them to have to send their animals a long distance away for processing. Having a facility closer to home makes it much more feasible.
Thank you, Representative Sanson. And in the audience is Paul Fish, who I welcome to the committee because he has been working on this project for several years and is waiting because he has at various times had farm animals at his home in Solway, and or at his farm in Solway. And so throughout the whole district and the five counties that support this facility, there has been acclamations for the program. And so having the needs stated once again, this isn't the first time they've been here for this, is important to remind us of that. Representative Salk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just curious, most of the umbrella agencies have some sort of hierarchy of need, that sort of thing. So is there a ranking of your facility relative to DOC's needs for the near future?
Ms. Arola, or representative.
So make sure I understand the question. Is this a high priority for the agency?
Right, for DOC. I mean, and it's typical that somebody from DOC at some point will say, these are the order of our needed projects across the system, the DOC system. And I know that sometimes that also gets muddled, but it also speaks to the issue is that we only got $6 to spend this year, and so it'll be a challenge to be sure we can cover everything.
Madam Chair?
Ms. Arola.
Representative, thank you for that question. I actually met with the Department of Corrections yesterday. Obviously, the previous administration was very familiar with NERC. Commissioner Roy came from Arrowhead Regional Corrections, and so I spent some time meeting with them yesterday. And I received a text message this morning saying that I could share with this committee that they support this project.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I've decided, since we're already over the 10 minutes on this, to defer any comments and questions. But thank you for what you do.
Thank you. Representative Considine.
Thank you. We actually heard this presentation in my committee the other day. Again, NERC diverts a lot of people out of the prison system, and actually I've have toured there, and their programming is some of the best in the state.
Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Listergaard. Many of us have been there a couple different times, and it's amazing up there with the work that you're doing, and thank you for that. It's good to hear about the project. I think the last time we were there, it was pouring rain, so we actually couldn't see too much outside, but still a great story, and thank you for bringing it to us today.
And we had good apples, too. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Lissigard, Virginia Fire Chief.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In knowing there's a time crunch, this is a wonderful project. And before you, I brought Mayor Cuffey from Virginia and Chief Lewis that will discuss the project.
Who's first?
First. Yes, thank you. Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you very much for hearing our testimony today and taking a look at the bill as we move forward. My name is Larry Cuffey, Jr., and I am the current city mayor of the city of Virginia. In your brochure that we passed out to you for you today, gives you a lot of information about our project. This has been a project in the making for the last 10 years. The fire department was established in 1893. The building was built in 1907. It's 112 years old. It was used horses to pull the apparatuses, and that's the same building that exists today. It's structurally unsound, and it's end of its constructive life. We've been working on this project for the last 10 years. It is adequately no space available for personnel or equipment. We've got covered closet space in order to accommodate sleeping quarters. It will not accommodate new fire apparatus. There are temporary timbers erected to shore up the foundation of this facility. And practically indoor training cannot be conducted in that facility. There's no room for that. And so since 2014, we have increased our staffing from 19 firefighter paramedics to 37 firefighter paramedics. And this consists of full-time firefighter paramedics, single-role paramedics, and basic life support EMTs. So we need this new regional training facility for a variety of reasons, and just give me a couple of minutes, please. We're requesting this state funding to acquire land, demolish existing blighting structures, develop and remediate the site, and assist with the construction of a 60,000-square-foot facility that will not only house fire, EMS, paramedics, and police department, it will also be a regional training facility. established for the entire region. Now, we have met with RAMS, the Range Association of Municipalities and Schools. We also met with the Iron Range Mayors Association, of which I am part of. And we've been working diligently behind the scenes to get regional support for this project. So it's not just a Virginia project. It is a regional project. And we have 14 mayors who have signed on to this project in support of the regional training facility, which we are going to provide. And I think I'm going to turn the rest of it over to Chief Lewis to talk about their operational component of it. But before I do that, I would like to say that we are going to issue general obligation bonds to accommodate the gap. So if we're seeking X amount of dollars for this project, we are willing to use general obligation bonds in order to finish this project. This project is going to be in upwards of $26 million, and at the front of your brochure, you'll see an architectural rendition of what the building could look like, and not necessarily the building it's going to be, but this is the facility that we've planned. We have a design available. We have a housing study. We have a fire study, and we have a shared service study that's all been conducted, and all that's going to be inclusive as we move forward, and hopefully for some bond fund money for this regional public safety facility. So thank you very much for your time and for listening to this testimony and considering our request.
Madam Chair.
Chief Lewis.
Madam Chair, committee members, thank you so much for allowing me this opportunity. I won't repeat what Mayor Cuffey said, but I just will say that the demand for services in our area has increased exponentially. 29% of our calls currently are outside the city of Virginia limits. We cover an area that is 640 square miles in our ambulance primary service area, but we intercept with over 1,000 square miles. Beyond just the call demands that have increased over 18%, and remember, 29% of those calls are outside of the city of Virginia, we also provide training for the entire region. Monthly, we host both regional fire and regional EMS training. This is part of this facility that would incorporate the ability for us to do that. Our station is old. It's not able to house the personnel that are currently there. Our call volume, like I said, has kept increasing, but we have not been able to keep pace with that with the amount of people that we are hiring. The hospital transfers have absolutely driven up that ability or that demand on our service. There was a space needs and site selection survey conducted. It ended in 2016. It identified six sites. We've narrowed those sites down. The city council will make the final decision on that site. Going forward, we have looked at using 100% American steel. We have project labor agreements in place. There will use local laborers, local contractors for this project. At this time, I'd just like to stand for any questions that the members may have.
Chief Lewis and Mayor Cuffey, there's a need. I understand that from the documents that you've submitted to my through the mail to us, and there's a support from people because I've received petitions and form letters with signatures with addresses and phone numbers on them, and that shows great support on the local level. But I have not heard of any plan of how it's going to be funded except from the state's contribution. Please explain the funding for this and how many municipalities have a buy-in to this rather than just a receiver of services.
Representative Murphy, Madam Chair, and members of the committee, we are seeking $15 million from the state.
Yes.
There's approximately another $11 million which the city will bond for. And we use general obligation bonds to accomplish that task. And so that's the buy-in for us. We do have the 14 mayors of the Iron Range that have signed on. Some of have resolutions from their city council supporting this project from a regional perspective. We are the only provider of advanced life support within this region. We're the only full-time fire department, full-time paramedic service that provides this service. So in answer to your question, Madam Chair, is that about $11 million will come from general obligation bonds, which we will be carrying.
So the total project costs how much money?
Rounding it off, $27 million.
all these services that are increasing exponentially, I think was the word, do you charge back for those services then?
On our ambulances, we do not. We charge we have an authorized ambulance taxing district. We do not have the ability to charge those communities for that service we provide. We provide services on a routine basis. For example, in Mountain Iron, we responded to 244 calls last year. We responded to 72 in Bowabic and 133 in Eveleth. We do not charge those communities anything because they have to opt into that specialized taxing district. We charge the patient when we respond. That does not allow us to charge for the cost of readiness, the cost of that. Only when we do respond, we charge the patient directly on ambulance. On fires, we are utilized quite often to respond as well. So that is a piece that I haven't really talked about too much, but it is not just medical. It's also fires.
Okay. I think we're going to have a discussion to clarify my angst, I guess, a little bit on the financial buy-in from the service area at another time. But you've explained the need, and you've explained that the services are very welcome and that there you have a lot of support. Representative Considine.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just wanted to also congratulate you on your excellent choice of architects.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much.
Madam Chair, members of the committees, thank you.
Ms. Nash will be in touch. Representative Sandin. Chief Schroeder, welcome to the committee. Representative Sandin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a question to the committee. Do we get points for brevity and clarity?
Yeah.
You're on time, so let's go.
Okay. Thank you very much. Madam Chair and Committee, House File 101 addresses some of the needs for the Cloquet Area Fire District Fire Station. The Cloquet Fire District encompasses several communities around the city of Cloquet and actually backs up through mutual aid agreements several volunteer fire departments in the vicinity, that being Midway Township, Solway Township, and Hermantown as well. So we have today with us Chief Kevin Schroeder that will explain the bill.
Fire Chief Schroeder, welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. The Cloquet Area Fire District is a singular entity. We're an independent service district within Minnesota providing fire and EMS service. We were established in 2009 to address declining emergency services in our rural area, and with that, the increasing cost to provide those services. Since 2009, we have expanded dramatically. We now serve 7 townships and 3 cities within our area. And with that, we've got some growing problems and growing pains. And our original language allowed us to operate and to move forward. But we lease all of our facilities in the communities we serve. So in 2015, after we conducted a facility study and the city of Cloquet conducted their own, they asked us to vacate the building we're using in the city of Cloquet at the end of 2019. The study showed that the building didn't work well for either of us. It's currently a combined fire and police facility, and they were going to use the facility and create one bigger police department. So in 2015, we began looking at facilities. We hired architects. We put together engineers. We did a space and site analysis. We've actually done schematic design development. We're actually shovel ready. When we went to look at the financing aspect, we found there was a technical error in our enabling legislation, and we cannot bond or incur debt to build a facility. So we're a singular entity, and I have a singular problem. state bonding is the only way we can move forward at this point. We are looking at combining two fire stations, an administrative office, and our training operations into one building. That would eliminate four leased facilities throughout our communities and put us together in one central location. We have land that was donated by local industry. They gave us 13 acres that we've done the geotechnical work on and site analysis. We are set to go, except for the one small error is we can't fund our own project. So we're here today asking for the state help to allow us to move forward and consolidate our stuff, increase our efficiency, and better serve the entire region that we serve. So with that, I'll take questions.
Representative Juergens.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I saw you pondering probably the same question. Could you explain a little bit more about why you can't fund it yourself? I'm not understanding.
There was language put in. Sorry, Madam Chair. There was language established in our original 2009 legislation allowing, on its face, allowing us to bond and incur debt. But the statute that was cited specifically prohibits special service districts, which we are. So when we contracted with, we used Ellers Incorporated out of St. Paul here for our municipal financing, every one of their lawyers came back and said, you need to get this straightened out, and nobody's going to issue you bonds when the statute says you're not allowed to do it. So we have been working for the last couple of years to get that statute number clarified and changed, but we've been unsuccessful so far in the legislative process.
Ms. Dyson, could you help us out?
Madam Chair and representatives, I am aware of the special law for the Cloquet Area Fire District, but I'd have to have it in front of me in order to see the cross-reference that he's referring to. But special legislation for the district, if that's the confining part of this, that would govern what they'd be able to do. And if they're being told they can't issue debt based on that, I don't know what else. It sounds like the special law would have to be amended. I don't have it in front of me, so I can't specifically speak to it.
Representative Sundin, when you were advocating for this special fire district, and I remember that well, there wasn't any thought that this is the way that we're going to get the state to build our fire hall, is it? Was it?
Looking at the options, and as Chief Schroeder explained, this is the only option we have in front of us right now.
I understand that from what he said, but that wasn't the intent of the legislation, was it?
Back then?
Right.
Yes, Chief Schroeder would rather answer that.
Madam Chair?
Chief Schroeder.
No, that was not the intent. We were, up until late 2015, 2016, confident we had the ability to pay for the project ourselves. We held our public hearings. We held everything else. We worked on the levy impacts. It wasn't until the lawyers got involved at the last step that there was disagreement.
Would Representative Sundin and Chief Schroeder, would you supply the name of the lawyers to us on paper at a later time today?
Yes, ma'am.
And so we can go back to some of that. I thought there was one more over here. Okay, I think we need more clarification before we say anything. But thank you for bringing this to our attention. Tell me what so you think this building that you have, that you want to create, you estimate that it's going to cost, the full price is $13.7 million?
Madam Chair, the 13.7 is the worst-case scenario based on our construction management company. We are looking at the 10 to 12 is the realistic range. But the outside, depending on cost delays and unknown tariff costs and that kind of stuff, was 13.7.
And where will that be? Where is that land that you're going to build this on?
On County Highway 45 and 22nd Street in the city of Cloquet. It is directly adjacent to the Sappy Paper Facility and the old Jardin Match Mill.
So these other townships and three cities, are they in agreement with the site?
Yes, we have full support from our member communities and also from the community itself.
And the fire district then would pay for the heat and light and all the things, the programming that goes on in there from then on, or?
Correct. Those costs are currently in our operating budget. We, as I stated, we lease all our facilities, so we pay utilities, we pay insurance, we pay all that. We just do not have the ability currently to capital the facility spending.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
We will talk again, Representative Sundin.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Committee, for your ongoing interest in this project.
Good choice of words. Representative Gunther. They didn't ask us just to change the manager. We'll talk again. Representative Gunther, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. It's a pleasure to be here and present House File 1075 to your scrutiny. This is a proposal for a Martin County jail that has been under pressure from the Department of Corrections to make corrections that they are not able to afford to do now. And they had to make some other decisions. And those decisions are best described by the Martin County Sheriff, who's sitting right beside me, Sheriff Marquardt.
Good morning, welcome. Madam Chair and members of the committee. As Representative Gunther said, I'm Martin County Sheriff, and my name is Jeff Marquardt. Greetings from southern Minnesota and the I-90 corridor, also from down south. Today's project that we have introduced to the committee is deficiencies in our jail. And in 1972-74 is when our jail was opened up, turned key on it. And already on the day that we opened up that jail, it was already outdated. Equipment and everything, from keys to unlocking doors, have to be built and made from scratch even today. We're looking at Department of Corrections changes throughout the years. In square footage have changed. We started out our facility and campus there with 34 beds, and because of the square footage, we've had to remove a wall, and so we have more square footage per inmate, which takes out two more beds, so we're down to 32. And then since then, we've come down in other rules from the Department of Corrections, which only allows us to hold 80% of our 32 beds. So that brings us down to 25 is all that we can hold. Today, we're down in our numbers, so I only have 12 inmates that are out of county, but I do put inmates in three other different counties now. Because of the linear design of our building, we have to have sight and sound separation between male and female, and we no longer can have females even in our jail, so we spend a lot of time transporting. In a different campus, a different facility, we have plans of putting in a couple of areas for juveniles that we can hold for 24 to 48 hours. Our closest juvenile detention center is in Wilmer, so it's a 6-hour round trip for us to go get a juvenile to bring back for court on a early Monday morning hearing. and that's the closest that we have. So also females, we house in Faribault County, Jackson County, Nobles County, Scott County. It's really eating up our resources just in transportation every day. Mental health is another problem that we have, and I know that all of you here have heard the words mental health just about every day with issues, no matter who it is and where we're at out here. And that's another issue that we are hoping to put into our plan, and for the Mayo Health Clinic to work with us to come to our facility in a nice area to help do evaluations there in a secure area, rather than we spending hours upon hours in the hospital doing security for them in an unsafe scenario. So that pretty much wraps it up. I mean, our building is insufficient anymore, and they're really starting to put pressure on us to do something, either some type of remodeling. But in the long run, in the safety of our inmates, which is utmost our top priority, either getting them to court or in the facility, we would like to move forward with a different project. In that project, yesterday I got an updated proposal, and it was right $40 million. And I believe we're coming to ask for 20 from the committee, and we appreciate your considerations, and I would take any questions that you would have.
Chief Marquardt, when was the present building built?
We turned the key, I believe it was 1974. And at that time, they told us it would be a 40-year building, and We're working on a little bit of extra time on that now.
And in the meantime, that there's been no changes made to it except what DOC has required in the bed allotments?
Correct.
And what was the cost in 1974?
$5.8 million. We did have a project, the same project, wrote up about 10 years ago, and at that time, for the more square footage that what we are looking at proposing today, it was $23 million. So in 10 years, we're looking at doubling the price and less square footage. So.
And you have the land, and you have the, would it be the same site?
No, ma'am. We're on right on a lake, and so we're kind of landlocked there. So what we're looking at is other area, ground that hasn't been broke within the city limits of Fairmont, and we've already started inquiries about purchasing that property.
Right. You have a deputy with you?
I do, Chief Deputy Clandrew.
Would you like to address us quickly?
Good morning. I'm Chief Deputy Corey Clandrew. Thanks for the time, madam. And I just wanted to say, as the sheriff highlighted, we started this project back in 2007. We had a study done, and at the time it wasn't deemed economically feasible for our community just because of the cost. And unfortunately, over those 10 to 12 years that we've now waited, the costs have almost doubled. And so looking at talking with our financial people, it's again, strapping our small community to be able to afford that increase, and I'm not a finance person, but I've been told it's an increase of almost 6% in our levy, and that's without any general operational increases, and so it's just a large strain, and we're looking for any assistance that we can get.
Thank you, Representative Considine.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And once again, I have been in this jail a number of times, not as a customer, but 10, 15 years ago, this thing was an antique. I'm not sure how they did it in 74. There was no room for anything, and it is landlocked. There's no place to go building on the same site. The only thing I would say is they've had some excellent staff there over the years that I had the privilege to work with. Is Joe still there? Pardon? Joe, still working?
Joe's in Faribault County.
Faribault County, okay, all right.
Retiring next week.
Okay, well, yeah, he made it. But anyway, yeah, there's just not a lot of room to do anything in this particular jail.
Representative Cantrell.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Sheriff Marquardt. Just so I understand, so the kind of perspective plan that we're looking at is, should a new facility be funded and one be constructed, would this old facility, would it just be sold? It wouldn't. Would it be in use anymore? Just so I understand.
I think the plan would be to not use it anymore, because the project is looking at another $5 to $7 million just to update that building. And I've been told that a wrecking ball would probably be the best route for that facility, and use the area for parking next to the courthouse.
So does this request for $20 million include the cost of demolition?
I do not believe it does, no.
All right. Representative Erdahl.
thank you, Madam Chair. Be quick, because we're over time again. I'm interested in the mental health. Are you going to have a separate unit for that?
That's what we're working towards, whether it's just one or two separate rooms available, because that would have to be separated from everything else. We don't even know if it's possible yet through the DOC or the Department of Corrections to even have that. But that would be my goal, is to get that, try to move in a room or two so that we can house someone for 48 hours or that 72-hour hold that we're working on. Again, as was mentioned in one of the hearings earlier, mental health, we're running to Sioux Falls, Fargo, Duluth. We spend a lot of time on the road. So if we can put something together there for our neighbors even to utilize, I think that would be a regional asset.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And you know, one of the reasons why in the last bill we created 5 mental health crisis centers around the state was because of reports from sheriffs like you that our jails are being used to house people really with mental illness and not people who have committed crimes. And so that's why I emphasize the importance of you planning to do that.
It's jail's not a place for mental health people. It's we don't believe they should be there, and they need the help, and we can't get that for them all the time.
And we don't believe that either, Sheriff.
Thank you.
And the legislature has spoken on that already. So is there someone from the Department of Corrections here? Well, Sheriff, Representative Gunther, Deputy, we are going to ask the Department of Corrections to share some of the communications that they've made with you, and so that we can better understand the need for this request. And it sounds like there's a great need, and we want to help.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Boehner, I'm sorry. Representative Boehner, welcome to the committee.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members. I'm Representative Kristen Boehner from Maple Grove and Osseo. And I want to thank you first all for the opportunity to be here before you today.
And just let you know that this project is the result of bipartisan effort, and I want to thank my compatriot, Representative Robbins from 34A, who is also in the audience here today in support of this measure. We are here today to talk about the expansion of the North Metro Range. This is a regional facility, one of three here in the state. We have one up in the Northwest, one in the Southwest, and one in the Northeast. I believe there are plans at some point to add a Southeast facility as well. This facility serves about 1,700 law enforcement folks. Those are on the state, local, county, and federal levels. Everyone from police officers and state troopers to the FBI and postal inspectors train at this facility. And as you know, in recent years, we have continued to ask more and more of our local law enforcement officials, and those include various training and things like de-escalation, as well as crisis intervention, working on mental health crises, management and conflict management and mediation, as well as looking into issues of cultural diversity and implicit bias. And in order to do all of those fun things, one of the things that we have is the ability to do situational training and facilities to accommodate those types of trainings that we're requesting of our officers to make sure that folks in our communities are safe, as well as our officers. And today we have a facility up in the North Metro that has serviced about, that has served about almost 30 years now, and we are reaching full capacity for our ability to do that. We do actually have the land here in Maple Grove to be able to expand the range. So really what we're asking for today is some additional funds in addition to those by the city to expand the range so that we can include some additional training areas so we can accommodate those trainings and de-escalation as well as situational awareness training in particular, as well as expanding a few of the lanes so that they can continue to do their qualifying training as well each and every year as they're required to do by state law. And with that, I have with me today several individuals who are first and foremost the experts on this facility, and so I'm going to give deference to them. I have with me today our police chief, Warner, as well as Al Frang, who runs this facility, and he runs it at tighter than a ship. So I'm going to let them speak to that. I also have our community administrator here with us today as well, who is very well versed in all the particulars of this project as well. Thank you.
Welcome.
Thank you. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Eric Warner. I'm the Chief of Police for the City of Maple Grove, and I want to thank you for the opportunity to speak to the committee about our funding request to expand the North Metro Range Regional Training Facility. This project is important to public safety and all communities and agencies served by this facility, as you can see by the representatives that are behind me to my right. For brief history, in 1992, the city built and funded the North Metro Range Training Facility to provide indoor firing range, training classroom space, and firearm simulator to meet the training needs of its police department and one additional agency at the time. After 25 years, the facility has grown into a highly sought-after regional asset serving 19 customer organizations to include local, county, state, and federal law enforcement agencies and post-secondary law enforcement education institutions. Those agencies that are customers include the FBI, the DEA, Secret Service, Federal Flight Deck Officers, Minnesota State Patrol and DNR, and the Hennepin County Sheriff's Office. Additionally, the local agencies include Plymouth, Brooklyn Park, New Hope, Champlin, Rogers, and Wayzata, as is represented here today. Over 1,700 officers go through the facility annually to receive training. The officers trained at the facility serve over 300,000 residents within Hennepin County and across the state, and the facility also provides for public use and training as well. As it's been said, the facility is currently at capacity, causing difficulties for all of our agencies to schedule range and training time. And it's also, we're at capacity, we're having to turn away agencies that are asking for service from our facility. Additionally, the facility is in need of modernization to meet today's state and federal training regulations. Those regulations include the additional post mandates that have been talked about that were signed into law in 2017 and recommendations from the President's Task Force on 21st Century Policing. The requested funding is for a 24,000 square foot expansion that will give us additional class space for de-escalation and crisis intervention training. There will be dedicated space for a state-of-the-art decision-making simulation lab, and then there will be simulation space for realistic scenario-based training environment and also additional firearms lanes and training space. Personnel utilizing this expansion facility will return to their communities with the highest level of training for the challenges that they face in a 21st century environment. For the training that I've mentioned of crisis intervention, de-escalation, and other critical training are all brought together in a high-quality integrated training environment. So, Madam Chair, members of the committee, I would like to turn it over to our facilities manager at this time for some additional comments.
Mr. Frank.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, thank you. I appreciate the time and an opportunity to speak to you. My name is Al Frang. I'm the manager at the existing public safety training facility. We are a regional facility. We have about 19 to 20 customer agencies and or law enforcement related agencies. Our facility is currently staffed by former law enforcement officers, and so we have a high level staff. Our business model generates income that takes care of our operating expenses and our capital costs. So we run very well and very lean and make things happen there at our facility. Additionally, it's important to note that our regional public safety training facility currently meets all the criteria that has come from two state-level reports here at the legislature. So we're in a position to meet the criteria that was set in advance. Also note that we consider this would be considered for capital funding. So we meet all the requirements already currently in that. Our regional facility is a proven model. It's envisioned by those state studies. It's also a proven model in high-quality public safety training, so the officers that come through there get an opportunity to get the training that they need.
Chief Werner, the first facility or the present facility was built from the city of Maple Grove. They built it themselves, or was there state money involved then?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, when the facility was first built, it was built with funding from the city of Maple Grove, and then that additional agency we had an agreement with to take in revenue to help with the costs.
And today, is it still being funded by all those various agencies that use the facility?
Madam Chair, yes. We have joint powers agreements or service agreements from those 19 customer organizations to generate revenue for operations.
And how do you raise the prices?
Madam Chair, we do a study every year when we look at what we're serving and what we're charging, and then we base it on our costs increases, and then we build that into our agreements on an annual basis.
And in the $6,500,000 that you are asking this committee to consider, is that matched by the various entities that use the facility, or is it just matched by Maple Grove, the city of Maple Grove?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the $6.5 million the city of Maple Grove has committed to match that. We have had other customer organizations that are interested in the facility, so we would look to capture those costs through some future agreements with other agencies. And it's also important to note that we own the land that this facility would be built on.
Thank you very much. Representative Bonner, do you have any closing remarks?
I just want to say thank you again, Madam Chair, and to the members here for giving us this opportunity. And again, a thank you to Representative Robbins, who is in full support of this measure as well, and our local law enforcement officials, who continue to do a great job, and to Al, of course, for running a tight ship. And thank you again to the committee, and we appreciate your support.
Thank you. Representative Cagle. Representative Cagle, welcome to the committee.
Good morning, Madam
Chair. Please tell us about the project that you bring before us.
So, House File 773 is for a regional training center that would serve multiple suburbs in the North Metro. There's a strong regional need for training centers like this, and so this would be this bond would be for property planning and design. And with that, I will turn it over to Chief Smith to explain the project further.
Good morning, Madam Chair, committee members. It's an honor to speak in front of you today, especially Madam Chair Murphy, being a former Hermantown resident. It's an honor to speak in front of you today, so thank you. Just like
and
Mayor
you're Fred most said. Welcome.
Thank you. My name is Charlie Smith, and I'm the fire chief of the Spring Lake Park Blaine Moundsview Fire Department. We serve three communities in the North Metro and provide all hazard fire protection. I'm here to speak to you today on the Greater Twin Cities Regional Training Facility. In 2013, before I was fire chief in this area, the concept of a multidiscipline training facility has been talked about and discussed at length, and now we're at a point where we have had some facilities that have been demolished. We had a fire training area that was constructed in Fridley in 1993. That facility was demolished in 2017-18 for one of their city projects. And we currently provide service for 85,000 people. With the growth in Anoka County, that's going to be occurring in 2040. Not only are we going to continue to be busier, but so are law enforcement agencies as well. Anoka County is predicted to grow from 360 to about 440,000 people in that same time frame. Our communities and region are in transition, and so are our public safety agencies within our region. The law enforcement and fire agency staff are turning over at a greater rate, so that results in a younger pool of police officers and firefighters and EMS personnel. Our career fields are still very much based on experiential learning. You can have the education that you need from post-secondary schools and other types of training, but we really need to reinforce the ability to do the job, fight fire, law enforcement to do their skill training, and things like that. That's the only way to achieve greater experience and to perform consistently on the job. And to expect the best, we must be able to provide the best in all areas, especially training. So currently for us, the nearest fixed fire training facility is in Minneapolis, the City of Minneapolis Emergency Operations Training Center, which is about 14 miles away from the center of Anoka County. That presents some, and the nearest law enforcement, the nearest law enforcement one is the Maple Grove facility, which you just heard from. Both of these, the travel distances present a logistical issue for us, especially on the fire department, to get all our apparatus and firefighters down to a fixed facility. It creates some significant difficulty. So because of that, we don't engage in the training as often as we like or as often as we need to, especially the live fire training that is so desperately needed. And as you heard from the Maple Grove facility, as was identified in 2009 Department of Public Safety study, most, if not all, public safety training facilities are either at their capacity or over capacity, and as the years have gone on, it seems to continue to be at that level where we are either at or over capacity. So with these limiting factors, we're required to find other venues to fill the gap and accomplish required training. These factors often contribute to less time spent on critical training each year, with being able to just meet the minimum standards that are required for police and fire. Realistic training is conducted while staying in budget is desperately needed. And the Greater Twin Cities Regional Public Safety Training Facility would be the only multidiscipline facility north of Interstate 94 in the Seven County metro area. There are three located south of that. A new multidiscipline training facility will not only serve the local agencies within Anoka County, there are 21 agencies, both fire and law and public works, including the Anoka County commissioners that have pledged their support for this type of project. Not only will it serve our local agencies, but areas in Ramsey, Hennepin, and other areas of the region further north. The police, fire, and EMS and public works agencies work collaboratively, but those sessions are often limited to once a year at best. To best serve our stakeholders, we need to create a high-performing facility, multidiscipline area that we can collaborate together as entities to prepare for even large emergencies, which we don't have the opportunity for, unless it's an acquired structure or other type of church or some other type of venue such as that. Thank you very much for your time and consideration on this project.
All right. Representative Cagle.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I also have City Council Member Julie Jepson here. And then we also have our City Manager, Clark Arneson, here to answer any questions.
Good morning, Madam Chair. Counselor. Thank you very much. Thank you for having me, committee members, as well. My name is Julie Jepson. I was elected onto Blaine City Council in 2016. With a significant growth in the North Metro, specifically Blaine, seeing an increase of 30% in their resident population over the next 5, 10, 20 years, this dramatic increase demands also the need for public safety, which is why I'm sitting here in front of you today. In my day job as the executive director of Stepping Stone Emergency Housing, the only single adult homeless shelter in Anoka, Washington, Dakota, Scott, and Carver counties, I understand the need for collaborations and essential partnerships, which is what this regional training facility is all about. Through this, through the collaborations, through my work in Anoka County, I've learned many things, but one of which is that within Anoka County, we support one another. We have each other's back. It's essential to be part of the same process, full steam ahead. With this regional training facility, we will be able to continue our supportive collaborations by providing cooperative training opportunities for when we will inevitably have to work together, providing emergency and public safety essential incidents. For those of us in Anoka County and beyond, we don't see city borders. We see human beings who need life-saving services provided to them. It doesn't matter which city logo a firefighter wears. When it comes to matters of life and death, we're all part of the same community. Thank you for allowing me this time this morning.
Representative Cagle, I understand that you have an amount now where you didn't when you introduced the bill.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. In the in your packets, there's the A1, and that has the amount, the $1.9 million that we are requesting.
And is the... Is there a match then, a local match?
There can be, yes.
Representative Erdahl?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And about 10 years ago when I was representing Annandale, they had a request for a shoot house renovation. And, boy, I tried a couple times and I could not get that through because of the opposition from the Department of Public Safety, saying that there were too many training centers. They wanted to consolidate into like two or three across the whole state. But now we've heard from a couple today. We've funded one last year in the South Metro. And so, Chief Smith, I'm wondering, do you know when the department changed their position on this, or have they?
Madam Chair, great question, Representative Erdahl. If you review the 2009 study on facility use and public safety training facilities, the recommendations from the Department of Public Safety are that they be multi-jurisdictional, or not multi-jurisdictional, excuse me, multi-discipline type training facilities. So there is, if you look at the map in the packet on page 3, there are only three multi-jurisdictional training facilities or multi-discipline training facilities within the seven-county metro area: Scale in Scott County, South Metro in Hennepin, and the under-construction Hero Center in Washington County. Those are the multi-discipline with fire, police, EMS, and the DPS has not changed their position on that, and that's one of the priorities, is that it be a multi-discipline type training facility. Now, there's singular ones that have been around, and most of those have been around, as you heard from the Maple Grove Police Chief. Theirs has been around since 1993. Ours will be designed as that true multi-discipline facility in accordance with what the DPS recommends.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you for that. So maybe now Representative McDonald should try again for Annandale. Thank you.
Representative Juergens.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And as chief author of the Hero Center bill last year, I'm proud that our facility is being used as a model and that you mentioned it here on your executive summary. So thank you for that. And Madam Chair, you touched on the actual question that I had when you brought up the A1 amendment. And I just want clarification, Representative Cagle, that the A1 amendment states that this does not require a non-state contribution. And I'm just curious why. You said it could be, but the amendment says it does not require it. Could you explain that to us, please?
I'll defer to the city manager.
Mr. Anderson?
Arneson, Madam Chair.
Arneson, I'm sorry.
Thank you for the opportunity to be here this morning. We are very early on in this process, and project funding with 21 partners has not been fully discussed. If a match is an expectation, we certainly will come forward with that.
We've got a couple months. Or a month.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
For the discussion.
Yes.
And members, I think we're going to have to talk more about public safety, where we are with public safety and training facilities before we make our final determinations. But this gathering of information is very helpful. So thank you very much. Representative Dean.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, committee members. I am going to present to you today House File 668, and I know we have a PowerPoint, which you all have copies in your packet, so should something happen, we knuckle it up. Hopefully you'll be able to follow along as well. It's appropriating money for the Emergency Operating Center and Fire Training Facility that Minneapolis has. It's actually housed in Fridley. It's one of the weird jurisdictional things that happens with the city of Minneapolis. For those of you who don't know, Representative Fridley and I live fairly close to Theodore Worth Parkway and Theodore Worth Golf Course, and some of that is in Golden Valley. So it's you know, Minneapolis has been around a long time, so there's a lot of odd things that are related to that. And I have with me today here Chief Friedel, who will speak a little bit about the work. And I guess our PowerPoint presentation is up now.
We have.
And you have it too. So I will turn it over to them to talk about the project, and we'll take questions after we're done. And I hope they go really, really fast through the PowerPoint.
Thank you, Representative. Thank you, Representative Dean and Chairman Murphy. Because of the time factor, I think I'll just go off script a little bit and we'll
just introduce yourself first.
There we go. I'll do that. I'm again John Friedel, Chief of Minneapolis Fire Department. Very proud to say that I'm the Chief of Minneapolis Fire Department.
Is it Friedel?
Friedel.
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 Spell it.
I thank you for the opportunity to Chairman Murphy, to be for yourself and the committee to talk about our project in Minneapolis. You know, 40 years ago when I started my career, all we really were trained on was putting the wet stuff on the red stuff. It's a young man here. You put the water in the fire, fire up, go out, and go back to the fire station. That's going to be it. You know, as time has evolved and as my career has evolved, so has the fire service and our areas of responsibility. And I'm here really to talk about the technical rescue aspect of that in our facility and our final phase of the project that we have. In Minneapolis, we have a very unique facility that we have the capacity to do many things in terms of area of training. We can do high-rise training, low-rise structural firefighting training, rail training on rail car. We can do confined space training. We also have hazardous materials props. We have a facility that is utilized by many, many other cities and other departments in different areas of training. But one area that is not necessarily always talked about is that area of technical rescue. And when I talk about technical rescue, I talk about high-angle rope rescue, confined space, structural collapse, and trench rescue. That is one area that we are finding more and more and more is becoming a much bigger demand for our service. We in Minneapolis, along with departments of Edina, Dakota County, Rochester, and the City of St. Paul, all make up members of Minnesota Task Force 1. Minnesota Task Force 1 is a group of highly trained men and women who are highly trained in technical rescue, which brings me back to the reason for the ask in our final phase of our project in Minneapolis. We are going to establish, we want to establish a technical rescue area in our facility for these men and women of these other departments to come and train. Minnesota Task Force 1 is a state asset, and we are able to respond throughout the state. We have a 72-hour self-sustainable capability. We have millions of dollars of equipment that has been purchased by funding through the state that we certainly take care of. We try to sustain it as best we can, but the most important part is keeping our men and women trained in the area of technical rescue. At the present time, in a matter of a week and a half, we are going to send a group of 17 to the state of Wisconsin so they can receive technical rescue training and structural collapse. That is going to cost us $176,000 to send those men and women down, 17 members of a 180-member team, to be trained in structural collapse. I think that we can come up with a more efficient way, a more effective way to train our folks, and that leads me to the project in Minneapolis, where we would have the final phase of the project would construct a rubble pile, construct a rack building, construct a high-rise, a confined space facility that we could really in-house train our own folks. It is. When I talk about Minnesota Task Force 1, we've been around since 19, in about 15 years we started the program. We are a state asset, like I said. I think it's important for us to try to provide as much local support as I can with that. It doesn't seem efficient to me to send our folks out state to be trained. I know we have Camp Ripley up north. That's a unique facility in itself. But the problem with Camp Ripley is that it does not provide us the opportunity to give our rescuers a repetition that it takes to develop these skills in technical rescue. We can reset a challenging prop, for example, a challenging that they have to either get somebody out of a confined space area. That is something that our facility can provide the numbers of repetitions that they would need to really effectively become skilled at what the positions they want to try to prepare themselves for in terms of technical rescue. And then when it comes by, when we talk about Camp Ripley, that's a facility where we all can get together and do a much more of a coordinated, larger, full-scale exercise. We all go and demonstrate our skill sets. So that's, what I think, what sets us apart from a lot of other facilities, where we have a lot of capacity, we have a lot of capability. We have a cadet class going through right now in Minneapolis. The unique thing about this class, in another 2 weeks, we're going to add 25 cadets from St. Paul. So we're going to have 45 cadet firefighters going through our facility at the same time, learning how to be firefighters. Now, it's going to be unique with Minneapolis and St. Paul challenging themselves to who can be the best firefighters. I would hope that Minneapolis does well in that regard, I would hope. So I will certainly open it up to any question you may have in the respect for time.
Representative Sandstedt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You said 17 members that you're sending for training or proposed training at $176,000 for that training. Out of the remainder, do those other members have to be trained at some point in time in this type of rescue? Is that your hope?
We are all trained right now. We have a 180-member team right now that's all trained. Like was mentioned earlier, we have attrition. Like the silver tsunami is starting to hit our team also. This team was made up of 180 members, five doctors, members from all those agencies I mentioned. And so when I talk about the 17 going down, those are members from Edina, St. Paul, Dakota County, Rochester. They're all going down together to be trained on that. But we're just trying to sustain the team through that training. And it does cost $176,000 to give those folks that training.
I don't know if I asked that clearly. My point is, the 17 don't have this training, correct?
That's correct.
Out of the remainder, all the others have been trained in this type of...
That's correct.
Okay, thank you.
We've all trained them.
Then the people that have been trained at your facility,
okay,
do they go back to their areas and train others, or do they have to all be trained in your facility?
Madam Chair, that's good. In terms of Minnesota Task Force 1 members, they do take that skill set, and they do take it back, and they do have responses within their community. And I know in Minneapolis, for example, we have a Rescue 1, and they are technically trained in technical rescue. They are also members of Minnesota Task Force 1. So our members, once they receive this training, they take it back to their agencies, and they do internal training within their agencies also.
Representative Salk.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. What I'd like to do is just ask for something that hopefully ties a bit of what we've heard this morning together, because I'm keenly aware, I'm from Rochester, I'm keenly aware of the existence of these high expertise squads that can come in. We've had the bomb squad down any number of times. Yeah. I think we may have had opportunities where we needed the SWAT group to come to enhance the SWAT training that we have. So there are times when that specialty group is particularly important. To Representative Erdahl's question of whomever is in charge has sometimes swayed in terms of what they say, we would like to have one of each in a certain geographic area, and then to say no to others who would like to have maybe specialties. My sense is we can't afford to have this sort of swinging authority or strategic thinking. So if it could be written down, this is our current strategic intent, this is our current capacity to meet that strategic and that timeliness, because I mean it's an hour and 20 minutes as I sit right here to Rochester, and I suspect your vehicles can make it in a little less than that. So it's there are those quantities that actually are useful as we are sitting and assessing the need. Now the fact is it's an hour and 20 minutes to Rochester from right here. It's also an hour and 20 minutes to part of the metro area from right here, particularly with your big machines. So I know that all of that needs to be quantified when you're making strategic plans. So I'm sorry for that being a long question, but I think it would be good if we got that from you and or your immediate colleagues to give us some sense of what is the strategic status of this kind of planning. And that's I don't need an answer to that.
Chief Friedel.
Chair Murphy, would like to answer if you don't mind. We do have a strategic plan. We put a strategic plan together for the team. I would love to share that with the chairman and the committee so you can see the outline of what our strategic plan is. We just went through that process a few months ago. We're the only state team, I believe, that went through that process. So, Brian, I think it's a very valid point that you make. I think we have to have a strategic plan. I think we have to have a sense of direction, and I think we need to share that, especially to representatives.
Representative Salt.
Shortly. And also who is doing what, so that we can see that also.
I will certainly share that. Thank you.
We would appreciate that.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Dean.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, committee members. Before we go, just want to clarify that this isn't only Minneapolis Fire Department that use this training facility. Other departments use it as well, just in case members were...
But you have the land, and you have the
yes.
area for...
And we have the responsibility for taking care of the operations and financing as well.
Thank you for being here, Chief Friedel, because I did not really understand this request when I spoke with the mayor when he came and said this was a priority item, and I didn't have a clue of, even when he left, of what really was what was imagined, and now I do.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You can always call on me, too.
Representative Riverdahl?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think it also might be useful to have some contact with the Department of Public Safety as to what their vision for these training centers is.
You bet.
Madam Chair, I'll move the minutes from the March 5th meeting.
Thank you. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Minutes are adopted as printed. Any other business? This meeting is adjourned.